When last we saw Paul, he was in an area called Pisidian Antioch. So not the Assyrian Antioch, but Asia Minor's Antioch. He visited the synagogue. He was asked to preach. He gave the longest recorded synagogue sermon that Luke records. And so that's probably an example of what his preaching looked like. And he made a gospel appeal. The response was Jewish resistance. At first, they were rather interested to hear what he said. he's a master of scriptures, and so it was probably fascinating for them. But when they saw how interested the Gentiles were, they took offense. Again and again, you see this theme. All the way back to Jesus preaching his first sermon in Nazareth. When he talked about the fact that God showed mercy to the Gentiles, his hometown synagogue prepared to throw him off the cliff. Okay, the idea that God would show grace and mercy to Gentiles often is a trigger point to Jewish opposition. So that's what happened. The Gentiles showed interest, so the Jews rejected him. And so he said, okay, you turn your back on the Messiah. Well, then the Messiah is going to the Gentiles. And so that meant they stirred up persecution. He was expelled from the town. And he and his disciples went and shook off the dust, as Jesus had told the apostles to do. There's some indication even the horses shook off the dust. I don't know. That's not in the Bible. That's where we were last time. So from then... And maybe I can again help you see this. Whoops. He was in Syrian Antioch up here, or Pisidian Antioch. Now he's going to come down to Iconium. And by the way, you'll notice this is in the region or the province of Galatia. So these are the churches that Paul writes the Galatian epistle to. In Iconium, we see this in chapter 14, he does it the same thing. He goes to the synagogue. He finds the synagogue. He preaches. Many believe, both Jews and Greeks. Unbelieving Jews stir up opposition. Matter of fact, let me go ahead and read the first six verses there of chapter 14. But you'll see a repeating pattern. In Iconium, they entered the synagogue of the Jews together and spoke in such a manner that a large number of people believed, both Jews and Greeks. So again, part of that is the Gentiles who were attracted to the Jewish faith went to the synagogue, listened to the preaching of the Bible. They were there. They heard this message and they believed, and some Jews did too. But the Jews who disbelieved stirred up the minds of the Gentiles and embittered them against the brethren. Therefore, they spent a long time there, speaking boldly with reliance upon the Lord, who was testifying to the word of his grace, granting that signs and wonders be done in their hands. So they preached, some believed, that led to opposition. Did you see that in verse 2? Therefore, those who disbelieved stirred up the minds of the Gentiles and embittered them against the brethren. Now, if you're looking at verse 3, what is the next word? The first word of verse 3. Therefore, whenever you see a therefore, find out what it's there for. Or if you're looking at a King James, whenever you see a wherefore, find out what it's there for. If you're looking at the Greek text, if you see an un, find out what it's doing. Okay, so or if you're in Hebrew, if you see a lachen, look back where you've been. So look to the context, the connecting word. What, therefore what? Because there was persecution, therefore they stayed longer. That's not what I'm expecting. Things got hot, therefore they left town, is what I would have expected. So it's kind of a stunning therefore. Therefore, because of opposition, they stayed. Two reasons. One, that very opposition could have stirred up more interest. And secondly, the opposition could have had more concern. We've got to get the believers here well established. But I love the fact that opposition for them wasn't just automatic, let's get out of town. Opposition in this case said, we'd better stay longer. So sometimes it's right and you see them leaving town. Other times they said, well, it's getting fierce. Batten down the hatches, we're in for a battle. Here we go. And that was their spirit here. Therefore, they stayed longer and preached fervently. And then that they discovered a violent plot, and now they leave, verses 5 and 6. But the people of the city were divided. Some sided with the Jews and some with the apostles. Notice the people of the city. So you get the idea. I mean, the whole city was topsy-turvy over this. Everybody was talking about it. Some were for these guys and said, this is great, and others were violently opposed. Again, I think it was John Wesley when he would send out his evangelists into the villages, and he'd bring them back to report. And the question he would ask is, how many got saved, and how many got mad? You know, was there a response to your preaching? Well, the city was divided. When an attempt was made by both the Gentiles and the Jews with their rulers to mistreat them and stone them, they became aware of it. So now here's another plot. So we see that theme. Back in Damascus, they're going to kill you. They're watching the gates, okay, over the wall. Here's, you know, opposition got so bad in Antioch, leave and go to Iconium. Now they're in Iconium. They're going to stone you to death. Let's get out of town. And they fled to the cities of Lycaonia, Lystra, and Derbe, and the surrounding region. So where am I? So here we are. So back to our map. So they leave Iconium, and you notice this region is also called Lycaonia. It had its own language as well. And so they go to the cities of Lystra and Derbe. He kind of put Derbe, he puts those together. And then verse 7, and they continued to preach the gospel. Now, what's our response if people start getting angry and oppositional? Have you ever had anyone get angry? You tell them something and they blow up at you? I'm not asking for anyone in church, or especially not in this church. That would never happen. But have you ever had anyone get, what's your first response? Well, I'm not doing that again, right? That didn't work. What's their response? They're right back preaching. Because the question isn't, did it make people happy? The question is the Lord pleased? What did the Lord tell us to do? Preach the gospel. So notice the balance. They're going to kill us. Time to move. Maybe we should back off, Paul. Can't you just see? Maybe some of his friends said, Paul, you know, I kind of noticed something. When you started using that word sin, they started frowning. Let's get away from the word sin. You know, let's talk about how to make better friends. We've got a great book here for you. How to win Jews and Gentiles, you know. He's not going to compromise his message. When so often we might say, well, that one hurt. Okay. Stay faithful still. And so they continue to preach the gospel. And then verses 8 to 10, he heals a man who's lame from birth. And again, what's the significance of the fact he's lame from birth? Why is that a more significant miracle? Pardon me? Yeah, for one thing, clearly. Everybody knows this guy's lame. What's the chances it's psychosomatic? You know, that it's just an emotional thing. I think I've shared with you the time I went to a church and they had announced healings. God was doing healings. And he said, some of you right now have this terrible pain in your neck and I'm pronouncing it healed. Well, if you've had a hard day at the office, you know, you kind of might have some pain. And if you believe enough, oh, I'm feeling relaxed. Well, that could work for stress kind of things. Oh, my stomach was really hurting. Now it's not. This guy has never in his life walked, and now he's walking. Kind of, you know, and again, everybody knew who he was, and you know, it's a very clear miracle. And by the way, instantaneous. One of the things I learned after I had surgery on my knee was, it's amazing how quickly the muscles can atrophy and how much work it takes to get it back to acceptable. Well, take someone who's never walked on a leg. They're not even atrophied muscles. I don't think that's a technical term. They're just not there. And instantly, I mean, God creates muscle tissue, and he's able to walk. That's a fantastic miracle. And so we see that the man there, he's healed. And God does a miracle there. Then we're told what happens next. And by the way, I'll just mention in passing, quickly over to chapter 16, Paul came also to Derbe and to Lystra. Looking back, this is when he returns in this area. And a disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a Jewish woman who was a believer, but his father was a Greek. He was well spoken of by the brethren who were in Lystra and Iconium. So notice, it seems like Timothy is from Lystra. And so it's very likely Timothy, you know, Paul called Timothy his son in the faith. So this, he's already a devout and respected disciple when they come back on the second missionary journey. So that points to the fact that on right here in these verses, he healed a lame man, but there was even a bigger miracle. Timothy got saved. In other words, a heart was regenerated, not just muscle tissue. And so the evidence seems to be that right in this visit, Timothy gets saved. But then things get out of line. The crowds, these are a bunch of pagans, right? You see a miracle healing, it must be the gods are at work. And so, they say that they must be Hermes and Zeus. You've heard of Zeus, right? The great chief god. Hermes, was that the purse manufacturer? Some kind of a fashion thing, I think. But Hermes, you've heard of hermeneutics. That's the science of interpretation. Hermes was the interpreting, a god who interpreted for the gods. And so since Paul was the one doing most of the preaching, he must be Hermes. And the other guy with him, that's Zeus, is what they assumed. But there was a legend that the gods had come once before, had been not recognized and honored by the town, and so they got in a lot of trouble. Well, here we have a clear miracle. The gods must be with us. We're not going to miss them this time. Let's worship them. And so in verse 13, the priest of Zeus, whose temple was just outside the city, brought oxen and garlands to the gates and wanted to sacrifice with the crowds. You can imagine for a good Jewish boy like Paul, this made him very nervous. You're going to offer a sacrifice to me? That is so abominable to a Jewish man, the thought that you would offer a sacrifice to a person. They went into a panic. And part of the problem is this is Lycaonia. And so they're talking in a language he's not hearing. Have you ever been in a situation where around another language and all of a sudden there's this excitement? I had that one time when I was teaching over in Taiwan an English class. And the rule was you can only speak English in class. Well, I came in one time and there was a fury of Chinese going. Needless to say, I was completely excluded from the conversation. I didn't have a clue what they were talking about. Well, that's what's all this fury? But all of a sudden, he starts noticing. They're bringing an ox, there's the knife, there's incense. And they start thinking, this isn't good. Because I don't think they're coming here to worship the Lord. They're not supposed to do it here anyway. They have to go to Jerusalem. And so the apostles reject their worship and start preaching. When they heard it, verse 14, they tore their robes. This is blasphemous. You don't offer sacrifices to us. They rushed into the crowd crying, men, why are you doing these things? We're men too. And then they start talking. You should turn from these vain things to a living God who made heaven and earth, the sea and all that's in them. So he takes them back. When you talk to pagans, you've got to go all the way back. There's one God who created everything. And you know, with Jews, you could start there and say, we understand all that. Now, let me tell you how he's fulfilling his promises. To pagans, there's a God. He created everything, not your multiple gods. And so with that, they started preaching the gospel. Here may have been what it looked like. You just kind of, or this is a little bit darker, but you get the idea. They're just horrified. Please, don't offer sacrifices to us. So how would you think? You're pretty popular. The crowds think you're so great, they're ready to worship you. What happens? Well, skipping down to verse 19. But Jews came from Antioch and Iconium, so they're following them. And having won over the crowds, they stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing him to be dead. That, what do they say about fame lasting for 15 minutes? His popularity lasted for about, what, 15 minutes, and he's from being a god to be worshipped to someone that you, instead of sacrifice to, you're going to stone him to death. And I have to think about Paul at that moment. Don't you think his mind went back to Jerusalem and the stoning of Stephen? He knew what it meant to be like on the other side of the rock. He literally was thrilled and rejoicing to see the stoning of one who followed Christ. Now he's the one being stoned. And how his mind must have turned to Stephen, and how he, you know, and how that must have just brought to life something that was now he considered one of the darkest days of his existence, that he had been a partner, a sponsor of that, and how he must, as with each hit of a stone, how he must have thought of, we did this to Stephen, I rejoice. And then how it must have brought back to mind, what was Stephen's response as they were stoning him? Do you remember? He says, God forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And how that must have been, what an experience this must have been for Paul. How it must have grieved his heart. How I think it made him easier for him not to be so hateful to these that were stoning him. He'd been on that side of it. And so I have to wonder if by God's grace, he might have had the grace to say, Father, I know what it's like to be out there. Change their hearts like you changed mine. But I just have to feel this must have been one of the most moving experiences in his life, because it really made him come, I'm sure, filled his mind with Stephen. So it says they stoned him and left him for dead. Dragged him out of the city. Now, was he dead? I'm inclined to say no. Some people say this is, he did die. He went up into heaven during this experience and came back. I don't think so. I think it just says they left him for dead. And then in verse 20, while the disciples stood around, he got up and entered the city. The next day, he went away with Barnabas to Derbe. So he got up, walked back into Lystra, and the next day said, you know, I think we might want to move to another city. Let's go down to Derbe. But you know, I'm just astonished at how lightly Luke passes over that. And he got up and said, boy, I'm glad that's over with. Let's go back into town. And the next day, again, how many people would say, I think it's time to quit? You know, I've known guys in ministry that have a real situation blow up in their face. And they just say, I think it's time to quit. And I'm not holding anyone up for criticism, because, you know, they go through a time of great, great, great discouragement. But most of them, it's not quite like this. And this just really says, the key though is sometimes you have to say, am I doing things right? Am I making a mistake? Is there something wrong with what I'm doing? You know, are there things that I'm doing that I'm doing wrong? But Paul knew the issue here was Christ. He was preaching Christ. And a big part of his problem was he was preaching that Christ loved even the Gentiles. And so that got the Jews stirring up the Gentiles. But he knew the problem was his faithfulness to Christ. He was suffering for Christ's sake, as Peter talks about. Peter says, you know, it's a shame if you suffer for your own sin, but if you're suffering for Christ's sake, that's wonderful. And so Paul had the courage to press on. And with that, I think he's a model and an example to us. I don't know if in our lifetime here we will come to this kind of persecution. It might come to that. There have been situations in America where I remember one of the, was it Columbine? School shooter. Are you a Christian? Yes. And shoot. This has happened in villages in Africa. Deny Christ. No. Okay, then let's assemble the village to watch that you're killed because you're a follower of Christ. That's happening now. Today. It has happened through the history of the church. And so may God give us the courage, whatever our opposition and pain must be. I think firstly we need to understand, maybe, and I'm putting a lot into Paul here. I may meet him in heaven and he might say, well, Drake, you kind of missed things there. I was raving furious when they were throwing those rocks at me. I should have had the attitude you said. But let's assume the best of our brother Paul and maybe ask ourselves, when those rocks are coming at you, wherever they're coming from. And for us, most of that will be sticks and stones of verbal abuse, slander, things like that. One step, I think, is to think about, you know what? I've been on the other side of that stone. I've been guilty of that. Another option is, but you know, Lord, you suffered so much more. This is nothing compared to what you did for me. And still recognizing these are sinners who need your grace. You've got to change their hearts. So instead of becoming bitter and angry back, and the other thing is, some have said, you know, in very hard times, it's hard for us to be critical, but you know, that's it. I've worked so hard, and where has it got me? Forget it. I'm quitting. I love this with Paul. Stoned and left for dead. I don't think he died, but he must have been a mess. Gets up, washed off, the next day, let's go to Derby and preach there. You wonder if some of the disciples were, you know, Paul, are you really sure? Now, by the way, just as a passing thought, what do you think John Mark would have been doing here in Lystra? I think he would have been in just falling apart. We can't go on. And I think in God's mercy he departed. But that's why later on Paul's going to say we can't bring him. This is not for the weak-hearted. There weren't any stonings or beatings or that kind of stuff at this point when Mark left. And so now that he's been through this and he's going to say, let's go back to those areas, Barnabas is going to say, well, let's bring John Mark. And I think Paul's going to say, this is too front line for a John Mark. And so they're going to, we'll get there, but you can see this is part of, I think, what influences him. Okay, any more comments on these folks? Sir.
What you're talking about here reminds me.
The apostles, remember, early in Jerusalem, they rejoiced that, hey, they think they're persecuting us because they recognize we're following Christ. We're doing something right. And Paul will write to the Philippians later after this, because he's writing from his Roman imprisonment. He's not in Rome yet. And what does he say? You know, his great ambition is to know Christ, the power of the resurrection. And that's where I would like to put the period. But then he goes on, and the fellowship of his suffering. I'm sure that's a textual error. He didn't really mean that. You know, but he's, you know, he understands. And this is a guy that's been stoned and left for dead. All this, he says, but you know what? I've never known closest to Christ like when those stones were hitting me because they saw Jesus in me. the fellowship of his suffering. I remember one of the testimonies of a missionary nurse, and as she was preparing to go into the field, someone asked her, "Are you prepared for the fellowship of his sufferings?" And she suffered some great brutalities in her service in Africa and thought about the very fact of that, that that was something that drew her nearer to the Lord. We may suffer for Christ, or we may suffer for our sin. We may suffer for illness. But what I love here is we don't see a bitterness in Paul. He's strengthened in his resolve to love and serve the Savior. That's a challenge for each and every one of us. And when we start thinking, but this is getting hard, think of Paul while the stones are landing, who would get up and say, "Let's go do that again." With joy and with love and with compassion. That's a challenge for us in a great way. Okay, we're going to turn to prayer.